Welcome to Hungry Dads, a couple of guys who started a podcast as an excuse to bring snack food into the house. On this week's show...
And I panicked.
You don't know if that thing's going to go off.
It's not that good.
You're a very powerful man at this point.
Dude in a leather jacket.
This is like a movie. It's like an adventure.
What is going on?
Hello and welcome to episode 60 of the Hungry Dads podcast. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
And we have some big news this week. Hugh went to McDonald's. But not just any McDonald's. There's more to it than that, folks. Hugh, what's going on with McDonald's?
All right, Rod, we have given quite a bit of time on the Hungry Dads podcast to McDonald's. In episode 46, we talked about the relationship between McDonald's and Burger King with the McWhopper that was suggested by Burger King. In episode 39, we gave a lot of time and attention to McDonald's I'm Loving It campaign. And way back in episode 11, we did an entire feature on their Our Food, Your Questions campaign. Over the last year, and even before that, it's crystal clear that McDonald's has been trying to reinvent itself, to change itself. And so I actually went to a McDonald's for the first time in a long time, and I wanted to share what I learned from that. And I have 10 realizations that I've come to about the quote-unquote new McDonald's based on this McDonald's trip.
Please, I would love to hear the 10 realizations.
Oh my God, that just hit me.
Did that hit you?
That hit me.
Wow.
The first realization about the new McDonald's is what I just mentioned. The McDonald's is trying so hard. I happen to walk by a nearby McDonald's. I don't go to McDonald's really ever anymore. And the reason it caught my attention is because I saw signage and a decor that I just didn't recognize. I saw these posters for like avocado and these exotic sauces and other options that I don't usually associate with McDonald's. And I saw a tagline that said, create your taste. What I first thought was that sounds like Burger King's old have it your way. So I was like, all right, what's McDonald's up to now? As a podcaster, as a journalist, I decided I needed to investigate further. So I went into the McDonald's and the whole place had been revamped with this modern black and silver motif. And the kitchen was open and you could look back on it. If you can picture a Five Guys, you know, Five Guys, you can just see right back into where they're cooking, or an In-N-Out. That's how this McDonald's was. And there were Coke Freestyle machines. I don't think that's necessarily brand new, but I don't see them a lot, at least in New York City. Overall, this defied what I expected to see from a McDonald's, and I'm not sure whether I liked it or didn't like it. There was some news recently, I think, that a new McDonald's debuted in Hong Kong, and there were pictures on the internet. Did you happen to see that or familiar with what McDonald's is doing here?
Yeah, I've read a little bit about it. I don't know too much. I think it's kind of an experimentation, like a very small focus group, I would guess, of seeing how people react to kind of a revamped look. The open kitchen's an interesting concept. Obviously, there's a lot of conspiracy and secrecy around what their burgers are made of. So if they open it up, let people see back there. They're not hiding anything. So I think it makes sense in these large, large cities. They've probably picked one location, and you were part of a focus group of sorts, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty exciting. And part of this ushering in perhaps a new era of McDonald's, I came to my second realization.
Oh my God!
McDonald's is clearly fighting back against the wage protests by use of technology. The most impressive new thing I saw in this McDonald's were these 8-foot-tall vertical self-service touchscreen ordering stations. They were right in the middle. There was still a full-service ordering cash register, but it wasn't as big, it wasn't as welcoming. They clearly wanted me to use these self-service monoliths, and...
Now, 8 feet tall, were you able to reach the top of it and order
Well,
properly?
The screen was largely at eye level, but at the top of
right.
it, yeah, I mean, it was large, and the screen was large. It was imposing.
That's impressive.
You've heard about these wage protests, minimum wage, and one way to slim down your staff is to have self-ordering technology. So I saw that to be perhaps a statement on that.
How do you feel about that, Podbot?
Those poor, oppressed machines, working for the man, literally, but I bet they make more than you guys pay me. Ahem.
With that, I can't deny, I was excited to try this self-ordering station. I had to make my way through a crowd to get to one of these things, and I figured I'd better test it out. I was just going to get a soda or something. I couldn't get to one because there were all kinds of teens using them, and there's a whole group of people, and I kind of figured out that none of them were really actually ordering anything. They were just playing around with it. I wasn't super annoyed, but I was kind of like, all right, this is nothing I'm going to mess with. But then out of nowhere, a human McDonald's staff member named Dorian plucked me out, and I guess she could tell I was serious about buying something. So she led me to one that was unoccupied that I could use. And I think she was assigned to these things, kind of like how when you go to the grocery store, they have the self-service checkout, but there's always one person who's assisting. Dorian explained over the whole crowd that the machine I had was out of paper for printing tickets. I guess I needed a ticket, so I'd have to remember my order number. I'm immediately a little bit stressed, but I'm still pretty excited about this whole new experience. Which brings me to my third realization.
That just hit me!
Is that I am personally a sucker for a new fast food experience, especially if I think I'm a pioneer. Like you said, I felt like I'm maybe in a test market here. I got pretty excited. So as I'm working through this, I'm playing a little bit with the ordering station, and I get to an option to, quote, create my own taste, or create your own taste. And I honestly hadn't intended on getting anything to eat, but now I kind of got excited and felt like I should at least check it out.
Plus Dorian was looking after you, so.
Well, Dorian had moved on. And so I'm kind of playing around with the burger options, and I am just playing, although I'm considering. But then right in the middle of this, Dorian comes back, and she's like, oh, are you going to do the create your taste selection? And I panicked, and I was like, I think I better say yes at this point. I can't say no. I was already like three options deep. So I was like, yeah, I am. She said, okay. And then she made me promise not to finalize my order until she came back. I was like, what's this about? I mean, is this some kind of surprise? Maybe I'm a lucky winner or something like that. So I'm going through my order, and I'm getting pretty excited. Like, what is she going to come back to tell me? Dorian comes back after I'm close to finishing my order. I haven't finished it yet, as promised, and she hands me like a little disc. And it's one of those discs that you've seen them at restaurants where they page you when your order's ready. So, you know, exciting, but now back down to earth. I'm not a lucky contest winner, but
you've won a disc.
I'm still enthralled in the experience. Now, I finish my order. I order soda and a burger. I actually don't order any fries. Now I have to remember the number 1039. And I don't have a piece of paper to remember it. Which brings me to my next realization.
Did that hit you?
That hit me!
Wow.
This new McDonald's and their table service system is pretty stressful. Now, not everyone needs to remember the number, but just compound onto that, that now I'm sitting and waiting for my food, which immediately makes me think that it's not going to come as fast. If they've set me up with a pager and I've gone to seat myself, they're in no rush to get me my food, which I don't enjoy.
Pager scenario is stressful in general.
Yeah.
You don't know if that thing's going to go off, it's functioning.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a little impersonal and a little bit stressful. At least in other places where you have the pager, you're usually standing there and like kind of waiting to be called. But here I was seated very far away from the kitchen, so I had no confidence that my food was going to come. And also, another outcrop of this that I didn't like was that they did not have a drink. Usually while you're waiting for your food, or at least in this kind of situation, you should have your drink. But I didn't even have my cup yet.
Right. That's a bad break. You can't even get the refill while you wait.
Exactly. So I'm excited still, but I'm critically picking it apart, trying to figure out what I like and don't like. But I'm still excited. This is still interesting. I go find an empty table and I look around, and I actually am reminded of my Double Down experience, which I talked about in episode 2, where I was the only idiot to walk into KFC and order a Double Down. And I kind of felt the same way because I looked around and everyone was eating off of their trays and sipping their sodas. And clearly no one was sitting there with a disc in hand and no food.
I kind of feel like you're part of a commercial at this point. Is this where this is going? You're like set up. You're a social media experiment.
It's not that good because fortunately I saw a fellow create your taster, dude in a leather jacket, across the restaurant. He was sitting there awkwardly with his disc in his hand, just like I was, and we were both waiting for our food. I'm waiting 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and I'm getting fairly anxious, and I actually need to get back to work. I kind of hadn't counted on having lunch at this point. My fellow create your taster across the restaurant, dude in a leather jacket, he gets his meal, which was definitely kind of exciting and inspiring and invigorating. I'm like, okay, the system works. So I know mine's coming. I'm getting excited. Someone comes by with a tray of food. And what's interesting is, so it wasn't just a normal McDonald's meal. They put the fries in a little wire basket, and the whole thing comes in like a wicker basket or something like that.
Wow.
There's a presentation factor. They come by, and she says, 1042. Now, pop quiz, hotshot. Was 1042 my number?
That was not your number. You were a 1039.
You're very good at this. You're right. My number was 1039, and I remembered it. And I dejectedly had to be like, no, that's not my meal. So she left with order 1042.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And I sat there for, I don't know, another 5-10 minutes, and I was literally about to walk out because I had to get back to work. I wasn't really mad, but I was just convinced that this whole create your taste thing, table service, was not worth any trouble, and I was going to leave. Then, out of nowhere, leather jacket from across the restaurant comes right over towards me and is like, "Hey, dude, what was your number?" And I told him it was 1039. And he's like, "I think I got your order. Did you get the sweet onion barbecue and tortilla strips on your burger?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Yeah, I did too, but I didn't get guacamole."
Sounds like your soulmate.
He's like, "Sorry, man, I started eating it." And it's worth noting, and I'm going to go through the number of options in a little bit, but out of what had to be hundreds and hundreds of burger combinations, he and I pretty much ordered the same burger.
A bizarre burger at that.
Match with enough accuracy to reasonably cause confusion. I guess that's why these numbers are so darn important. And I remembered mine, even though I didn't have a ticket. And hey, leather jacket, he came over, he was upfront and honest about it, which I thought was pretty impressive. This brings me to realization number six.
My big breakthrough is
the McDonald's staff at this restaurant were top notch. I was a little frustrated, but actually just kind of excited that I had a good story. And I started marching up to the counter, and on my way, I found Dorian, and I explained the situation, and she scooped me up and brought me right up to the counter. She's like, "Follow me." And I could tell she was ready to help handle this. So Dorian really is the hero of this story. She brought me right up to the counter and she pleaded my case right off the bat. The manager first tried to tell me that I wouldn't be charged because I never got my meal. But then Dorian and I were like vigorously explaining, "No, my meal came out. It just didn't get to me. My credit card will be charged." And I was going to start explaining this further. Then out of nowhere, leather jacket's right behind me, and he's right there with me, like in a wow. like in a prepared soliloquy, pleading my case. He's like, "Dude,
I ate this guy's burger.
I don't know what happened. I'm so sorry." And he goes, "I just noticed that it was on ciabatta bread, but I'd ordered artisanal bread." And he's really helping lay out the case here. He's like, "I didn't know this whole thing's new, so I didn't know what my burger was supposed to look like." He's being like a real good guy, but being a little defensive that like, "Hey, I don't know how this create your taste thing works. I didn't know what artisanal bread looks like versus ciabatta." Yeah. Which brings me to my next point.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Creating my own taste is obviously too complicated and too much work, at least in a McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's clear that the standard McDonald's customer, myself included, should probably not be asked to reckon with so many options, especially with ones labeled artisanal. I know they're trying to defy expectations over McDonald's, but my expectation for McDonald's really, I don't think, is this level of choice or freedom or sophistication. It's McDonald's.
I find the traditional McDonald's menu a little overwhelming at this point. There's already too much to choose from. It's decision fatigue. I was talking with Mrs. Budget. We were at In-N-Out Burger recently, and how refreshing it is that their menu is so tiny. It's like hamburger, cheeseburger, double hamburger, double cheeseburger.
So to that point, let me just bring you very quickly through the options that I had to navigate to create my own taste. Two burger choices, a third pound burger or a quarter pound burger. Four bun choices, toasted brioche, baker's bun, ciabatta bun, or lettuce wrap. Five cheese choices, Colby Jack, Swiss, classic cheese, shaved parmesan, or mozzarella. Six topping choices, bacon, eggs, guacamole, tortilla strips, grilled mushrooms, and grilled pineapple. Eight vegetable choices, jalapeno tomato, grilled onion, long sliced pickle, beetroot, red onion, spinach, and coleslaw. 11 sauce choices. Ketchup, tomato chili jam, barbecue, Big Mac sauce, pesto mayo, Dijonnaise, herb aioli, pesto red capsicum, regular aioli, Thai-style mayo, and chipotle mayo. Now, that's two burger choices, four bun choices, five cheese choices, six topping choices, nine vegetable choices, 11 sauce choices. Podbot, could you calculate for us the total number of options one could have with the Create Your Taste menu? And Rod, I'm just going to cross my fingers here because Podbot, if you've listened to prior episodes, has a history of, frankly, just not being too helpful in these situations. Podbot, what do you got?
That would be 23,760 hamburger permutations.
Sounds about right.
Okay. I'm going to assume that's true or not.
Yeah.
Given Podbot's record, I really don't know.
I'm not going to do the math myself, so.
If any listeners want to gut check Podbot, I'd really appreciate it.
Nobody's going to do the math.
For now, let's just say there's a lot of choices. Too many choices.
Yeah, if I had an hour to sit down with a menu and figure it all out, that would be kind of fun, but I can't imagine just walking up to the big 8-foot screen with people all around you and lines. Like, it would be way too overwhelming.
My eighth realization.
Did that hit you?
That hit me!
After all that, it still tasted like a McDonald's, which I don't know if that's good or bad. I think for all the effort, I don't actually think it's a compliment. Here's what I got. I got a quarter pound burger with white cheddar cheese on ciabatta roll, sweet onion sauce, tortilla strips, and lettuce. And it tasted like a McDonald's hamburger, and I mean that in a good way, but it certainly wasn't exceptional. I ended up getting a free order of French fries because Leather Jacket had ordered French fries and I hadn't, and I got his order.
Wow.
That was the final negotiation, in case I wasn't clear. I ended up getting Leather Jacket's order, and we all agreed to laugh about it. The manager actually said I could come back and get a free meal sometime and eat Leather Jacket's meal. So they were really trying to do right by this. I'll give them that.
Is it possible to get all these players on the podcast? I'd be interested in talking to Leather Jacket and the manager. And what was the employee's name?
Dorian is a true hero. I could probably go back and find Dorian. And honestly, if I go back and see Leather Jacket, I'm definitely bringing him on the podcast if he's there.
I want to get his side of the story. It sounds like a real hip dude.
But in the end, the thing tasted like McDonald's. So for all the effort, for all the choices,
So even the specialty items that you wouldn't find at a normal McDonald's were just kind of average. Like the tortilla strips and the special bun. Nothing great.
None of it knocked my socks off. But now I have to go to my 9th realization.
Wow!
Look, the jury's still out on this, but the gambit might have worked because I did go back. And it wasn't for the free meal. I didn't even capitalize on that. I was curious enough to try it again. And I did. I think McDonald's gambit worked. Or it didn't work because it brought me back in, but I don't know if I'm going to be a regular McDonald's customer. I initially went in for curiosity's sake, which got me back in the doors. I hadn't been to McDonald's for years. So maybe that's the gambit. Change everything up so curious consumers like me will go back in. I went back a second time.
And maybe deep down, you were kind of hoping to see Leather Jacket again. Leather Jacket may have been a plant now that I think about it. Maybe a McDonald's insider.
He said to me as we were separating, he's like, this thing's pretty cool though, right, man? Like, he was really into it. He was like into the...
I'm picturing him like smoking a cigarette for some reason, like leaning against a kiosk.
Which brings me to my last realization.
That hit me! Oh my god!
Changes have already been made. Perhaps based on my personal experience, I went back, ordered the Create Your Taste from the self-service monolith, and there were two particular things that I learned. First, no more table seating. They gave me a ticket with a number, no discs, no sitting down and waiting. I just waited with everyone else for my order to be called up. The other thing I learned was that you're supposed to get your drink cup when you order from the monolith. I personally didn't, because when they handed me my burger, I said, oh, where's my drink? And they go, oh, they didn't give you a cup. You were supposed to get a cup. So while imperfectly enacted, there clearly is a plan to address my lack of drink.
The cup thing seems like it would be a trip up, because you can't just leave the cups out lest people just take them and get free drinks. It sounds like at the very least you made a difference. You were a groundbreaking trooper and a very powerful man at this point in the world of McDonald's.
I'm bigger than Ronald McDonald, baby.
Hungry Dad.
One thing we haven't touched on yet on the podcast that I think is an important part of the Hungry Dad lifestyle is leftovers. And in fact, we have some leftover material from the podcast that we'll be sharing with you later. But first, let's talk about the actual food leftovers. Obviously, certain foods lend themselves better to leftovers than others. There are some pro tips out there for leftovers.
Yeah, I'm a fan of leftovers. I feel like most people like leftovers. Every so often, you talk to people who say they don't like leftovers and they never eat leftovers. In fact, my own wife, Mrs. Gallen, happens to be one of those people who doesn't really like leftovers. And I never really understood it and could never get a satisfactory explanation as to why. Rod, you like leftovers, I assume? Are you pro or anti-leftovers?
I'm generally pro-leftovers. They lend themselves to more eating. I think you have big portions. It requires some restraint to have leftovers, but I feel like it's worth it if I can put something away and look forward to it the next day or the day after that. I'm kind of motivated to have leftovers. It's funny that Mrs. Gallen is not a leftover person because Mrs. Budget is also somewhat anti-leftover.
Interesting.
With Mrs. Budget, I think I have a pretty clear understanding of her main opposition, and that is she doesn't like reheated meat. She feels like it gets overcooked, not so much from a standpoint of a steak getting overcooked, but if you even have some chicken around and you try to heat it back up, you obviously have to cook it again somewhat. And she thinks it gets rubbery and kind of tastes weird, which it kind of does, but I still think it's delicious in general. Yeah, I think it might be that my standards are just so much lower than hers in general when it comes to food that I can acknowledge that it doesn't taste quite as good, but it still tastes plenty good for me.
I think that begs one of the fundamental questions I wanted to ask about leftovers. There's some leftovers that are good cold that wouldn't be good hot. And then, of course, vice versa. And then there are some that probably are good either way. One example, I think, is pizza. Cold pizza is one of those quintessential leftovers. And in my personal opinion, it's better cold than it is reheated, especially if reheated in a microwave.
Yeah, I agree that reheating it in the microwave is not as good as cold. I think if you take the trouble to reheat it in kind of the oven or a toaster oven, it is better hot. But I see where you're coming from. I enjoy a nice cold slice of pizza. And I also think it depends on the toppings. Sometimes if you get like pepperoni and it's really greasy, get the cold slice out, the grease is kind of congealed all on top, which doesn't bother me that much, but I would kind of prefer it to have it like integrated back into the cheese.
I wrote down three foods that I don't think are ever salvageable in leftover format. Any guesses as to what those three foods would be?
I'm going to guess one that I don't think it was really on there, but it's a surprising one that I think is bad as leftovers, and that is Chinese food. Here's the deal with Chinese food. It's like the quintessential when people think of leftovers. It's Chinese leftovers. There's always leftovers with Chinese. And it's not an easy or terribly tasty thing to reheat. Rice is incredibly difficult to reheat without it getting all weird and hard and crunchy. Meat, I've kind of touched on. I don't mind it that much, but it doesn't taste nearly as good as the original. My whole hypothesis is there's this whole Chinese leftovers thing just because the portion sizes are so big that there's always leftovers. Not because it just lends itself to reheating and being really tasty.
It's something people eat as leftovers a lot more often, therefore they have the ability to comment on it. I do actually have a quick tip on keeping Chinese food good, and it depends on which order, of course, but before I put my Chinese food in the fridge, I sauce the rice. I mix it all together so that the rice is sitting in whatever flavorings the meat's also in, and then it all reheats with a little bit more moisture and flavor across the board. And I don't have a major aversion to reheated Chinese food.
I will sauce my rice, thank you.
The three things that I have never found to be salvageable as a leftover are fish, particularly sushi, but I'll throw all fish in there, actually. Eggs and salads with a dressing on them already. Just going one by one. Sushi, but really any kind of fish, I skeeve it right away. If I don't eat it as soon as it comes, 10 minutes in the fridge, I'm already over it. It comes out, it smells fishy. It's fish, it should smell fishy. I'm not interested.
How about tuna fish, like tuna salad?
As a leftover, I would skeeve it, because when I think leftover, I think it's been on the table to be served, it's been exposed to the elements, and now it's going back in, so I'm not interested. Now, tuna fish that you pick up at the store, you get out the container, you put some, you put it back in, I don't think that's a leftover, I think that's just your daily tuna fish salad usage. But as a leftover, yeah, if it's sat on the table for a meal, it's had spoons in it, and the spoons are gross, so no. Once it's been exposed to the elements, that's when the bacteria get in there, and then in the fridge they grow. The good thing about all of these, sushi included, is that means I should just eat it all. I don't use restraint for these types of things. I decide, all right, I may as well eat it now because I'm not going to eat it later, and it's relatively healthy, so overindulging on some sushi or some salad certainly isn't the end of the world. Eggs. Have you ever cooked up eggs, put them in the fridge, and then tried to reheat them? I mean, it's a rare occurrence, but it's no good. It's no good.
I've eaten them cold, leftover, I think, out of the fridge, kind of like as...
Oof. Like,
yeah.
Sounds rough, brother.
Like as an egg salad, I think.
Okay.
You know, things like that. Yeah, I've definitely not, like, scrambled
eggs. Like scrambled eggs is what I'm thinking. Yeah, like scrambled egg.
It sounds like it wouldn't go well.
A couple of other things that I think are dubious as leftovers, which is why, again, I try to just finish them on my first eating, is Mexican food. I guess maybe you could say it's the same as Chinese food, but I have trouble with the tortilla. I don't think a tortilla ever comes out the same way as it originally did. It gets a little chewy and crispy at the ends, and then wherever it's touching something else, it gets wet and then dry.
Yeah, I agree. I find Mexican leftovers to be very wet. They're kind of greasy, and kind of the beans is all like weighing everything down. It's a tough one, I agree.
French fries, you can have nominal success rewarming them in a toaster oven, but they're never as good, and microwave or cold is worse than actually eating them.
Yeah, microwave fries are just bad. Toaster oven, like you said, you can kind of pull it off, but it's a lot of work.
And they're never as good as the original, in my opinion. So again, there's just that much work going into them. Already, I'm over it. It doesn't meet leftover status if it can't be quick and easy. Really, truly do like leftover steak, almost to the point like I do pizza. I actually like cold steak in its own right.
Do you do it as a sandwich, or do you just pull out the meat and just gnaw away?
I'll sometimes just gnaw away at some cold, you know, like with my fingers, just eat some steak, what's left over. And I will actually save some steak from my meal just to have it cold the next day because I enjoy it that much.
It's very primal of you.
But whereas I like a cold leftover steak, a leftover burger does very little for me. Maybe because it's attached to that bun, and that bun doesn't keep well. Again, there's this liquid soaking issue that tends to arise in the refrigerator. So a burger leftover is never that great. And then lastly, it's kind of the same as the Mexican food, but I think it deserves its own mention, and it's nachos. I'm not sure nachos ever are worthy of being kept as a leftover. Pretty much just eat them, right?
It seems like it should work. That's one of those foods where I think I try it, like, you know, once a year. I'm like, oh yeah, leftover nachos, I'll do that. Then I pull it out of the fridge and I'm like, oh yeah, this doesn't work. I forgot again.
What do you think about leftover fried chicken?
It works cold for me. That's one of those foods that I enjoy cold. It kind of, almost the grease kind of soaks in overnight. If you leave it in the fridge, it's nicely integrated into the meat. You know, I'll grab a fried chicken leg and just gnaw away at it, much like you will with a steak.
Yeah, there's some real science out there about leftovers and foods that keep in the fridge. The flavors meld. When there's certain collagens and fats that can soak into starches, that actually forms a particular kind of deliciousness, I guess, in a leftover. And I think fried chicken's the epitome of that. What's interesting is that fried chicken's fried, and so are fries. But yet, one is excellent cold and leftover, and the other is absolutely horrid cold and leftover.
Another food that I think is better, actually, as a leftover the second, third day, is chili. I'll make a big pot of chili, and if it's hot off the stove, like right when it's done, the flavors kind of get lost because it's kind of hot and I don't think they've congealed in. And when you let it sit in the fridge overnight, that next day, it's much more flavorful, much spicier.
Yeah, chili gets a definite nod for better as a leftover. Maybe one of the few. What do you think about sandwiches as a leftover?
It's very doable. I find that the condiment sometimes gets kind of soggy again with the bread. I think we have a big sog problem with a lot of leftovers we've touched on. But sandwiches are generally doable, I've found.
Yeah, I think that sandwiches are an interesting example because I'm of the belief that a good sandwich, as long as it doesn't have the condiments or the vegetables on it, is actually better after it sits in the fridge for a day. And there's real science behind this. The flavors actually meld. They sit into each other. You got to have the right kind of bread. It can't be like your standard white Wonder bread or even a loaf of sliced bread from the store. It's got to be a good roll, like a crusty roll that actually softens with the exposure to the meats and the cheeses, and the meats and the cheeses all fit together well. You'll see like pre-made sandwiches at delis and stuff, at least here in New York, and I think a lot of other places. Those sandwiches are often very delicious because they were made earlier in the day or even the night before. But condiments are a big liability on those, as are lettuce and tomato. If lettuce and tomato has sat on a sandwich for any period of time beyond like a day,
a minute,
it really starts going ugly. And forget overnight. Here's a pro tip for you. If you have leftover sandwich, don't despair. Take off the lettuce, take off the tomato, scrape off some of your condiment, and then put it back in the fridge. And when you pull it out the next day, it's actually going to be pretty excellent.
Hungry Dads.
And with that talk of leftovers, let's throw to some leftover talk from when Johnny Prime visited in a prior episode. Unfortunately, some stuff just has to hit the cutting room floor, but we like to salvage it in a segment we're calling Leftovers. The first leftover is Johnny Prime talking about leftovers.
So I absolutely despise leftover steak. I love steak. I generally try to eat it all when I'm there. But a lot of times there's just too much for me to eat, so I bring it home. But this time, I broke my own rules for calling something a salad. You ask someone what they had for lunch, and their response is simply, "I had a salad." Your immediate thought is probably the leafy green type of thing. But without any more descriptive information, their response is utterly useless. I pulled up a little memory from growing up when my dad would cut up some leftover steak, really small, mix it with some oil, some vinegar, and some spicy pepper, and toss it all up and call it a steak salad. No hint of a green leafy item in there at all. So it's a quote-unquote salad, I guess.
Interesting. And so you went ahead and used the word salad with it?
Yeah, but I know I'm playing fast and loose here with the definition. The one thing that I was making fun of with the Wikipedia definition was that you can literally cut up anything, put it on a plate, and call it a salad. So I'm like, well, if I just cut up a ribeye and put it on a plate, it's a salad. And that's exactly what I did.
I think the word salad gets tossed around a lot. But, you know, but I can't think of another word to use to describe what you just did. I'm sure it's not a pate in any way. You're not going to call it a spread.
Yeah.
I can't come up with a better word. So until I hear one, I'm comfortable with calling chicken salad, tuna salad, and steak salad, steak salad. But don't sit there and tell someone you ate a salad if you're eating chopped up steak with olive oil, pepper, and cheese. The second leftover is also from when Johnny Prime was with us, but it is actually mostly myself talking about an odd mathematical analysis that I did that really is entirely unnecessary. I was reading to my son, the very hungry caterpillar.
I'm very familiar.
In the story, he eats an apple on Monday and then two oranges on Tuesday and three strawberries on Thursday. And by the sixth day, he eats
chocolate cake,
a bunch of different things, chocolate cake, and he eats through all these things. And I asked myself, what would be the equivalent of a man eating this number of things? And I thought I'd sit down on my computer and do a couple of calculations and come up with it. It took me two sessions into the wee hours of the night, 3 to 4 hours each night, crunching numbers, relearning geometry and trigonometry and the surface area of the foods and the volume of a human versus a caterpillar. What kind of caterpillar was it? I couldn't stop. I simply couldn't stop. I was obsessed with this. I just want to share with you now my conclusions.
Wow. I'm looking at it. This looks like 3 weeks worth of work.
It was ridiculous. I wanted to stop. I was tired.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it anymore. But at every turn, I kept thinking, I've got it. And every time I thought I had it, I realized the math was way above me or my logic was off.
My simple mind was like, oh, we should try to eat all that stuff at once.
The first thing I had to do was figure out what kind of caterpillar was this. And fortunately, the author, Eric Carle, on his site, gave some indication that this is a Parnassian butterfly, which would make it the larva of the Parnassian. I couldn't find the exact dimensions of this, but I was able to find a picture. And using my finger and a piece of string, I began to estimate the size of this caterpillar based on the picture. And so I got what I think is a reasonable estimate for the size of the caterpillar that I can compare to the size of a human being. From there, I had to imagine that this caterpillar had eaten a tunnel through all these different foods. That was how it's described in the book. There's a little hole in the food. And so he'd eaten a tunnel. So depending on the thickness of the food, he'd eaten either more or less of his own volume of that food.
Right.
If the food was thinner than him, he ate less than his own volume. If the food was thicker than him, he ate more than his own volume. So I thought if I can compare that to an average man, which I had to find the dimensions of and calculate a volume for, I could determine a ratio of the caterpillar to its own body volume, assess that to the same human volume. But of course, we're not talking about a giant sausage here. We're talking about a human eating several sausages. So then I had to review and try to calculate the volume of each food item and extrapolate that back from a human volume. And so I'm staring at these two-dimensional illustrations trying to estimate the dimensions of it so I can calculate the volume. I used pi, for real, like a bunch of times.
Wow.
It was crazy. This is what I came up with. Conservatively, the human equivalent of the very hungry caterpillar, the very hungry datapillar, would eat 700 apples on the first day, 1,100 pears on the second day, 2,100 plums on the third, 3,500 strawberries, 3,600 oranges, 500 pieces of cake, 1,300 ice cream cones, 1,100 pickles, 3,000 slices of Swiss cheese, 6,000 slices of salami, 6,000 lollipops, 1,400 slices of cherry pie, 1,100 sausages, 700 cupcakes, 1,000 slices of watermelon, and I didn't calculate the leaf at the end. It would just, I think, be a small salad.
Oh, man.
It seems like the cupcakes got shortchanged a little bit.
I'll say the same thing I said at the end of another experiment I did that was equally as worthless, where I did an assessment of the tensile strength of beef jerky. I beg you to review my work and improve upon it. This is just the beginning of the research. I'm not claiming I've got it right. I would welcome anyone to give me a peer review, improve upon it, point out where it's improper, incorrect. I can tell you this, I'm not doing any more work on this.
That's impressive, man. Hungry Dad. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
The fellow Create Your Taster across the restaurant, good looking guy.
We went and had sex in the bathroom.
totally hot.
Realization
dude.
Number six, I am gay.
A lot happens at a McDonald's on a Tuesday afternoon. So my fellow creator, good looking guy. Oh boy.